David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 435. I'm your host, Steve Raker, observing the multiverse from my post in the comic book bunker, along with my thralls, Andrew the LA Rabbit and Whirlwind X Kevin.
I'm stuffing some extra comics into that little hidden compartment on the back of my shirt.
Couldn't we make you all alliterative? Salubrious Steve Raker or something like that?
No. Marvel Noise is the semi-monthly podcast sponsored by nobody. We're proud to be part of the Deliberate Noise Network, which hosts a variety of noise making, including Indie Comic Book Noise, our sister show where we talk about indie comic books. It's right in the title. You can find shows over on marvelnoise.com and bug us.
Sometimes. I mean, if you can't find it there, you can at least find the show on Twitter and Blue Sky.
Right, the Matrix has been fighting back, fighting us. At least the current episodes are up. All right. We're due for a recent reads roundtable. But, you know, not necessarily recent comics, just what we've recently read. That's how we roll here. But before that, or maybe as my opening salvo, since I've got the mic, let me get into my con man consciousness and report on my trip to the Albany Comic Book Show last Sunday.
I believe Con Man is copyrighted by Indie Comic Book Noise. You're going to have to come up with another segment name.
I think we used it here first.
Oh, is that how
check,
it worked?
I would tell you to check the website, but it only goes back.
There's no evidence. Sorry, we can't validate your claim.
I've got a hard drive somewhere with all the shows on it. Don't worry. But the Albany Comic Book Show, when times are good, happens twice a year. Usually once in the beginning of the year, like in January, February time, and once around June, or sometimes it's around Halloween. This is a show that just pops up on the register, and it's always a good time because it's a bunch of the local to me here in upstate, true upstate New York area where folk creators get together, and then you know, a few guests who have just become endeared of the show and vice versa, and a lot of local you know, long box sellers and stuff like that. So it's a good show in a one day, just 6 hours long. It's like 10 to 4. $10 entry, kids are free. It's in the Polish Community Center currently. It used to be in a hotel that didn't survive COVID, and not that it caught COVID, but that it was.
I was gonna say they didn't vaccinate that hotel.
Well, it got run down, and then a whole bunch of people, like squatters, were in there and stuff, and then it just got overgrown, and now it looks like one of those like hidden abandoned places that you see like photographs of online. It's all like moss growing up the walls and stuff.
Wow.
Anyway.
I'm still gritting my teeth over the true upstate comic. You central New York people and your claims of grandeur.
Yeah, Capital District is upstate compared to downstate. At least we're not like on the New Jersey border. I mean, come
on. I'm just saying. There's some more people who claim to be upstate.
Yeah, well, you're practically on the Canadian border. No offense to Kevin. But it's in a large room, probably like their, you know, the like big bingo hall room, because there's like a stage there and everything, and they've got the artist alley lined up and a bunch of you know, all of the retailers and stuff, and in the corner, because of its other functions, there is a working grill, kitchen, and bar, And they start serving right away. Like at 9 a.m., they were serving Bloody Marys and beers and breakfast sandwiches and later Polish sausages. And it can be quite a time to just hang out with guys who have become good friends. It's 10 minutes from my house. So if they're going to get together and be there, I'm going to be there to support them doing that. And
also that short window must make it less of like this thing. You know what I mean? Sometimes I think the shorter shows have that advantage of it just feels more like a relaxing event rather than some kind of endurance competition.
For sure. Like every one of the creators there, I sat behind the table with and chatted with for a while, you know, letting me like sat in their extra chair next to them, that kind of thing. It's that kind of show where you don't just talk to somebody once and say, okay, see, you know, have a great weekend. You get to talk and hang out and then walk by again and talk about something else. And then soon you're, you know, having lunch together or whatever. You're eating Polish sausage. But so Mike McCone was there, Paul Pelletier, and Mike was not doing anything. So I was like, you know what? And it's funny, his work that he does on the spot, if you can catch him to do a sketch at a show, his artwork is a lot more affordable than his pre-done stuff that he brings. So I was able to get a lovely Starfire, like a headshot bust kind of thing. And it's funny because we were joking about how when he drew the character, because I knew it would be one familiar to him, he had a run on Titans over for the Distinguished Competition, and he simplified her armor and took out all the little Perez squiggles just to make it easier to draw. But on the piece he drew for me, he added the little squiggles. Yeah. He went that little extra mile and suffered for his artwork. I love that. And then he didn't bring his colors, though. He forgot his colored pens, because Starfire totally would have had him go the extra mile and have him do it in color, right? So you could see that golden skin. But it looks pretty sharp in black and white, don't you think?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. You were kind enough to send it around.
Yeah, and then
I think he was tweeting that he got some classic Avengers issues, too.
Oh, nice. There was definitely, yeah. I mean, there were some guys selling their long boxes who I've seen standing there looking lonely at past shows, and they were pretty crowded. There was a lot of people buying comics at this show.
Yeah, so it looks like some people made out with a good haul.
And Paul Pelletier, whose pencils I just love, he does tight pencils for con sketches, but doesn't do inks. And I have a Marvel Bronze Age Heroines jam piece that I had been working on in the past, but now I'm like not able to really go to shows financially. I have to go to this one because it's supporting my friend who runs the show and the local talent. I've used this opportunity to try to fill in some of those last squares. So I had two squares left, Ms. Marvel and Spider-Woman, and I got Paul Pelletier to draw Spider-Woman for me, and then I brought it over to my friend Rich Clark, who is a inker. He's also a penciler and a painter, but probably more well-known for inking Derek Robertson on a bunch of different things, some Batman stuff and the Boys and some other things, and he inked it for me, and it came out pretty nice. Then my sculptor Paul Harding was there, who's a good friend, and Jim Whiting, who's a friend of the show, hawking his wares. He's got quite a selection of things these days because of all the different little projects he's been involved in. Writer Ron Mars was there, and Steve Orlando made the trip over from Massachusetts. He used to be a regular when he was living closer, and he hasn't been to the last few, but it was good to have him back and be able to talk about the Scarlet Witch book that I have been enjoying, actually, and just beyond the Russell Dodderman covers as well. And it's interesting because that they had like a short run, and then they had a short, it was like renamed Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch for a few issues, and now it's like another, but it's like the same creative team basically. And
yeah,
same continuity too. I just picked up the number one of Scarlet.
Yeah, well, he shed some light on that. Like, as a fan, we see it one way, right? But as a creator on the other side, that's the way that editorial is supporting their creative efforts to let them still do their thing and build an audience while sales haven't been gangbusters right out of the chute.
Yeah, so that, Agents of Atlas was like that too, except no matter how many one-shots and guest appearances they did with the agents, no one wanted to read that. I mean, I read the whole thing, but no one wanted to read that.
But having a new number one here or there with the relaunch, even though it's the same stuff going on, helps the book out and helps keep a book like that that is sort of flying under the radar afloat.
Yeah, apparently he's going to be writing some Night Thrasher too in that upcoming Avengers miniseries.
Oh, cool. And Joe Sinnott's family was there too, so I got to catch up with Mark Sinnott and hear some good stories. He was describing how his older brothers were, he was the youngest of the family, Mark, and his older brothers, when they were coming up through the ranks, his dad was inking a lot of Westerns and romance comics and things along those lines. Whereas when he was growing up, it was the 60s, so it was the superheroes. And so his brothers never really were very interested, whereas he was all about it and was totally into it and describing what it was like when Kirby pages would come in the mail and stuff. And it was a lot of fun to hear him hold court a little bit and chat. Plus my buddies who are local, Derek Bush and John Pasquini, who I see at all the shows. They're often wearing ensemble shirts that match or have pictures of each other on them or doing some kind of silly thing, the pair of them. They did a Kickstarter this past year for their characters, Pack Rat and Thunder Bunny, and have the comic now that just came out a month or two ago. So they had a table for the first time, and don't you know, their table was busy all day long as people were giving them a lot of attention, which is kind of funny because for years these guys have been at, you know, at New York Comic Con, at Baltimore, and at this Albany show, and they often ask the creators to sketch these two characters for them. So by the time they came around to deciding to do a comic, they have like all these pinups and sketches that have been done by all these different people in the industry of these characters who had never seen the light of day. It's pretty funny. They're from the ground up way of building their superhero characters who are them, which is pretty funny too. Anyway. And I got to see a couple of buddies that I run into at shows. Bill Frank, who I see down in Baltimore and at this Albany show now and again, and Mark Beltran and a couple other guys. Definitely a good time. Way to spend an afternoon.
Yeah, it sounds really nice.
A show that's not an endurance test.
Yeah, I like that idea. You can just pop in and enjoy your, like, you're not getting up at the crack of dawn or staying super late or anything, and just leave your house, go there, and go back to your house like you're going to the comic book store or something.
You know what? That's really what it's like. It's like going to the comic store, but spending all day there because a bunch of guys are hanging out and, you know, a bunch of creators who are talking shop and all that business. A lot of fun. Those guys are great. All right, comics.
We got to go to comics. Can we take a slight detour?
Sure. Surprise
me. Do some TV? Some animation? Do you see where I'm heading?
The new season of Invincible? Yeah, I enjoyed it quite a lot. It was good.
Robot Chicken have another season? Again.
Anyhow. Finishing the show later than everyone else because While I enjoyed X-Men 97 on Disney Plus, it seems like everyone was like way more super enthused about it than I was, which is fine. You know, sometimes that happens. Not like you dislike the show or anything, but you know, certain shows that get that buzz and then you watch that and you're like, oh, I want to know what they're feeling, even though you were feeling pretty good. I don't. It's not the feeling that you gave something like a 7 out of 10. It's just like you feel like people like are at like a 10 out of 10, and then you're like you. I don't know. Maybe it's the '90s of it, right?
There's different strings that's pulling on. You know what I mean? Like, and if you give more weight to some of those other strings, whether they be the nostalgia or the whatever. That was my X-Men, or whatever, you know, whatever you might have, baggage you might have developed over the decades. It could be the greatest thing ever. I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought I would be like the perfect target audience, too. Like I know everyone didn't follow that series right to the end. Like, I watched that all the way to the end. So
I couldn't watch it all the way to the end because it was all spotty, and then I didn't know what was what, and it seemed like they were showing them out of order, and I just was like, ah, man, I was like in college. I couldn't deal with that.
I recently tried to restart the original one as like a prelude to it, and it was fine. It just didn't – I don't know. I wonder if you had to kind of be there at the moment.
Australian Wolverine.
I was like, it was fine. I just – you know, I'm glad they pull so much from the comics, but – at this point, it just, I don't know, it wasn't, maybe I'll try again.
I mean, there were episodes that I thought were bad, even at the time, but, like, there's certain, like, recreations or, like, comic storylines where I'm like, actually, this isn't half bad. So, I mean, yeah, there's, like, overacting and stuff like that in the original, but I don't know. I mean... If you're in a certain mindset, I don't think it's like the worst thing you could be watching. So, I mean, and then with the new one, they brought some of the voice people back, and you know the characters are basically there, and then they like change up the intros and stuff like there's a lot of cool stuff like that. And then of course stuff seeps in from like either you have from like they want to do some 80s thing, or then some 2000s thing, and then you're like, oh, I wonder if we're going in that direction. Like it's pretty interesting. I mean, it the thing maybe that doesn't get me all the way there is it's still the 90s, right?
That's like, what they
I
were going
I enjoyed
for
enjoyed the 90s more during the 90s. Like after that, it's sort of like I it's sort of like that moment where you were enjoying X-Force and then you got to like that Heroes Reborn type of, and then you kind of notice that something's not right. Like you grew up and then you tried to, like, it was kind of a bit like that. Like I know what the 90s is. So, I mean, I couldn't get totally back into that 90s groove.
Remember?
So, I mean.
Well, especially for those of us that skipped it at the time, like I've tried to go back and watch, you know, Wildcats cartoon or Savage Dragon and that stuff does seem pretty, like there's an aesthetic and a style that's just very 90s.
Yeah.
You know what holds up though? The Tick holds up. Love that cartoon.
Like maybe I would love it more now since I didn't love it then, although I saw like a lot of it. Like maybe the like certain absurdity things like I don't like now, but I also appreciate certain things like that. Like maybe back then I'd be like, oh, why does this guy have a chair on his head? Or
yeah, come on, like floating heads in stasis and stuff.
Certain things.
I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember the HBO Spawn cartoon was kind of fun. Wasn't that the 90s or was that? Yeah, that was the 90s.
Yeah.
So,
but I would say for a X-Men cartoon based on like 90s stuff, I mean, this is probably the best that we're gonna get. So I mean it's better than original. So I mean,
you know, remember before this all we had was the live action stuff where the characters didn't look anything, even try to look like the characters in the comics. So to have, even though they weren't doing the stories the way they were supposed to be go as far as comic continuity, the fact that they were using character models from the comics and bringing in, you know, side characters and B-level characters and D-level characters and showing them in their comic look was the thing that was, I drove the show. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't, you know, there was, you know, there was the Who Was Morph and all that business, but
yeah,
but everything else, it was like, these are this is the way they look. That's Mojo, for Pete's sake. And
yeah,
those things were, that was what was fun about it. They were using at least those ideas, and at least they were able to make them look right.
Well, that's the thing. I guess they could do like more original stories or something, but I think part of the original too is like they're adapting the Dark Phoenix saga. And if you're adapting like a different 90s story that's not as revered as that, like, you're still going to get some residual, it's the Dark Phoenix saga. Like, even though you have like, what's Gambit doing in the Dark Phoenix?
Yeah, right. And like, Jubilee.
Like, that was always so hilarious. Things like that, that were just like totally out of place. But yeah, it was a good time. So now we can bring back that unfinished Spider-Man cartoon, right? No, not that one.
Spectacular Spider-Man. Yeah, I would like to see that. The problem is, you know, Sony was doing that one, so I don't see Disney letting Sony. But that was, I really enjoyed that at the time. I haven't gone back to revisit it, but it was, I liked how it looked. I thought the story was good. Tons of great characters that were showing up.
And everyone was someone.
Have you read the comic book adaptation or not adaptation, just the comic book based on the X-Men 97?
No, I only read the one before that. That wasn't the same thing. Like, it was sort of a take on that idea, but it's not the direct prelude.
I didn't really slow down and read all the words, but they look pretty. And trying to, you know, with the way they're able to do colors now, trying to make like an animated palette, if you will.
So Mr. Sinister was in his glory there laughing and doing his bit.
Well, I know that IDW has had success with their Saturday morning cartoon style approach, yeah, to licensed books. I think there's a appetite for that type of look and feel, so smart for Marvel to jump in. They're not light. Marvel isn't having IDW put out books anymore, are they? They're done with that. For a while, they were doing like the kid, yeah, books.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I haven't seen any. Are they doing any? Not even the Star Wars, right?
Well, the Star, yeah, Wars went to Dark Horse.
Oh, really? Again?
Yeah, yeah. Some of the stuff I know. Some of the Star Wars non-Marvel stuff is at Dark Horse again for, like, what is it? Not the young YA? Is that what, yeah, you would call it? I don't know. It's a, yeah, different, yeah,
type. I'd call it the kiddie books, but no, yeah, knock against them. I mean, I've read plenty of that stuff. I just got volume 2 of the complete Spider-Ham trade, so.
The second volume is so much better than the first.
Well, I got the first one, and which is basically the run, the Marvel Tales, the Peter Parker book. Then I was like, well, let's get the second one just to pick up the backups and the all that other. I mean, towards the end, it gets ruined because they went, you know, they redesigned the character. So.
J. Jonah Jackal.
Yeah, that's too strong a word, but the Amazing Spider-Man right now. Have you been kept up, Kevin, at all? Or he's like,
What was the last? Yeah, 51 just came out, right?
Yeah, he's goblinized.
Yeah, I can't say I'm a fan of that or returning to story elements that I didn't get a lot out of. So, I mean, it's weird that I would be an advocate for like Norman Osborn and everything, because that never felt like it was going to ever work out. But doing what they're doing also doesn't feel like it's going to work out that well. It feels like a retread, like every 50 issues. So,
and the mechanism, like the whole, it's Kraven with the spear, where like it gets all the evil of your soul in the spear, and then he stuck Spider-Man with the spear, so it got him with the Norman bad juju, and now then in 51 he goes after the Sinister Six, because that's who Kraven's hanging out with, and it that does have some funny moments in it, but or entertaining moments, I should say. But I mean, to me, it's right up there with like Spider-Hulk, where it just seems, I don't know, on the surface, this spider ain't sticking to. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I read some of it. My problem is, I would have preferred if they'd grabbed, I don't know, maybe a newer character to do that with. The problem with a guy like the Green Goblin is the history is so long, like you can't really pull anything from the 60s or 70s, or it sends my brain into a spin a bit of it. You know, like the characters had too much history. You can just ignore a lot of it, which is fine, but too often they want to slip some reference to, you know, Spider-Man 172 or whatever in the middle of it, and then you're like, no, does not compute. You have to just kind of dump all that, or it doesn't, you know, really the guy that, you know, ran the Dark Avengers and everything. But just pick a newer, you know, there's plenty of bad creeps that would have a similar impact, but maybe don't have, you know, 80 years of history behind them. Yeah. Or just, like I said, don't reference any of that stuff at all and just pick a kind of recent point. He's done enough bad stuff recently.
I mean, it's so strange, like that whole idea and that whole Norman storyline. But I mean, it's probably better than other recent Norman storylines, so it's hard for me to complain.
So they're going to talk about him and Gwen Stacy and all that. Did the spear fix that around too?
Big issues of changing status quo and characters maybe not being in character, did you read the X-Men 35, the whole end of the Krakoa?
I was supposed to read that?
Did you try?
No, it's still sitting on my stack because I still haven't got the... what is it? The fall of the powers of...
Okay.
And the rise of... I still haven't got the last issues of those, so... I mean, I always perpetually have, like, this stack of, like, X-Men issues. Because I get one series way early, and then I'm like, oh, I probably should wait till the other ones...
Yes, show up. Yeah, yes, you should. Yes, you should. Because this issue is... 35 is very much like... X-Men 238, Uncanny, the issue like right after the Phoenix Saga, where it's Cyclops is walking away at the beginning, and they kind of, you know, it's not an exact duplicate. They don't really go through the history of everything up to that point, but it has that feeling of kind of a epilogue.
So it's like Onslaught epilogue.
Yeah, more like remember that apocalypse. Book from the 90s? Yes, but it's like apocalypse instead of, yeah. Well, you'll see. We'll talk about that next time.
All right.
Well, it's also partly my fault, Steve, because I made Kevin finish up the 4-issue recent Night Thrasher mini by Jay Holtham, Nelson Daniel, Matt Miller. Kevin, did you finish it for our discussion?
There was a moment today where I thought I wasn't going to be able to finish it, but I mean, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, there was time constraints on me.
Oh, it wasn't that there was one piece left on your plate and you were like, oh, I don't know, I guess I could eat it. Oh.
No, I just remember the first issue being, there being a lot there. And I don't think, like, that really is as much of a thing as the series miniseries goes on.
Yes.
So
agreed.
Yeah, so it's weird to say that I think I enjoyed the first issue the most because you got to check in, there was a lot of information, you're building the character up. Like, I enjoyed all that stuff, and
Totally
then
agreed.
I think it became more generic and not didn't really. I mean, it was fine, but it's a pretty familiar story. I mean, if you like Night Thrasher, like I do, like it's good enough, but it's not gonna. It's I don't know if it will make you a fan of Night Thrasher or go, oh, this is the one to read or anything.
Now, I don't know when this was actually created, but given the current status quo in the Marvel Universe, I think the series actually would have been served well to have been rolled into this Blood Hunt stuff. Because you could have thrown in all those check in with the characters and all the things that we liked about the beginning and the first two issues, but then kind of given it more legs by tying it into what's going on with all the vampire hordes and stuff. Just my thought.
Yeah, I mean, you could
A brief summary. So Night Thrasher comes back and is going to dissolve the family charity and the trust and all his work in Harlem, which is undergoing gentrification. Local tensions happen. Silhouette, who the new Warriors fan, remember, she was the Dark Force kind of teleporting woman with the braces, is on the board and very disappointed. It turns out that Rage, another former new warrior, former Avenger, under the terrible new name of OG,
No, would she? What now for?
with a sad character design of kind of a nothing burger, has trained some local kids to be the resistance. So it's sort of the three of them getting on the same page and diffusing the tensions. And so then by the end, the three of them are together and he's restarted his charity. Seems like you have a good core group for some kind of, like you said, Steve, some kind of Blood Hunt group or Avengers Harlem or some kind of little core of the three of them. We do see the introduction of the Night Thrasher cycle. Kind of sad he ditched the skateboard.
Yeah.
To see the return of like a motorized skateboard in lieu of the motorcycle.
I
I mean,
want to see
that's
a big
fine.
one, like a big one they can all fit on.
Oh, jeez. That would be hilarious.
Some kind of just more into the fun of the character rather than the angsty, angry bit. But
Have we.
yeah, I'm. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, have we seen an adventure throughout Night Thrasher's other appearances where they do anything where he like is surfing and is able to show that like he surfs great because he was a good skateboarder, like they're chasing the villain and he jumps on a surfboard and rides it in.
Well, you know, when I read that Night Thrasher ongoing series from the 1990s, I'll be able to tell you.
Okay.
I will say I enjoyed Night Thrasher went through a slight modification where he's now doing the jacket that can function like a cape if the art team wants it to. And I do like that. Like, that's like a cool change. It keeps the same kind of red and black padding and helmet and all that. It's just basically adding this cool jacket slash cape that adds to the charm of Night Thrasher. So that part is good. But like I said, Rage going for the kind of weird homeless guy, like ripped up clothes and everything, was just disappointing to me. I'm like, come on.
He looked at times a little bit like Luke Cage.
Yeah, I like exciting, fun, like it's a superhero world, like
Yeah.
give him some kind of outrageous outfit.
Yeah, I mean, I was hoping he would solve some social issues or something specific to the Marvel Universe. And I would have been like, yeah, this is different. But I mean, it's pretty heavy.
Sorry. Sorry, Krakoa's got to go.
But yeah, it was a
Yeah,
fun, fun four issues. It does feel like they're sort of moving these guys into place for something. that I'll be interested to see. But and I don't know, Silhouette's design is about the same. I'll be honest, I don't really remember too much about. I know it was like a dark outfit with those braces, so maybe it's been updated. I'm embarrassed to say I don't really, like I said, her. She was never, it felt like she was always like quitting the team or on the sidelines most of the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was dating and then she was like, I'm leaving. And I'm going to, what was that guy's name? And I don't even remember the guy's name. That was,
wasn't she hospitalized for a while too?
Well, there was the whole gang stuff. And then didn't she leave with one of the gang guys? Well, geez, why can we not remember those?
She's running with a fast crowd.
What wasn't it like issue 51 or something? Like she left.
Wow.
Yeah, something. Yeah, so her, she's not one, but I was glad to see her back and
you know,
in action as a superhero, not at, just on the like she does in the big climactic scene between the protesters and the police. She does. She's in the field in an outfit and all that stuff. And unlike OG, it's an actual outfit. I mean, are they really sticking with OG? Like,
no,
again, just no. A sad... It's superhero comics. I can give him a sillier name and a sillier outfit.
His name was Rage.
Yeah. If Silhouette was gone with 51, that means she didn't make it to Fight Bolt's time. The Fight Bolt's issues. As I merged the two series we covered for years into one amalgamation.
Well, I guess it's really on us, as Kevin pointed out, for failing to cover Night Thrasher's solo.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that. I mean, I looked at some of the creators, and I was surprised at the creators that worked on some of those books. So, I mean, the two I read weren't the best issues. Well, we read the first issue.
Yeah, and the time.
There was the tie-in.
The tie-in.
That was enough. Right. Yeah. Back then and now that I didn't continue. And then I read the time before time? Time and boy, we really remember those issues. What was it? It was
Time After Time?
Time After Time.
The Cyndi Lauper song.
Well, wasn't that the whole bit with Sphinx and everything? It was Time After Time?
Yep.
Okay. And I read those two issues, and those also weren't part of the best issues of the
Kevin, you're
the
not
series.
Selling us on this again.
But, I'm sure that doesn't represent the entire series.
Yeah, the rest of it's probably great.
Well, I think I remember Kurt Busiek was involved in something in that series, too. So, I mean...
He's the go-to guy for skateboard-based heroes, I believe.
Does he have one in Astro City?
He must at this point.
I don't know.
Cosmic skateboard. Speaking of the Blood Hunt, beyond the regular series, I've been reading, at least checking in on what the tertiary series are. And I can tell you two that are worth checking out, or that I at least enjoyed. And obviously... What I say about these tertiary series all the time is go with the ones that are characters that you're either really endeared to or creators that you follow. Otherwise, you know, don't sweat it. It's not going to be a main part of the, you know, the story. One of the books that I have been enjoying is the first two issues of Blood Hunters, which is an anthology book. It's got three stories in each issue, with the last story so far continuing through the issues, which is kind of cool. And that's the best one, too, because it's got Elsa Bloodstone and Dagger, who make a good pair against vampires. And the second issue has Elsa Bloodstone at home and features in a meaningful appearance of Adam, who is the Frankenstein monster of the Marvel Universe that we covered back in the day. So it's cool to see him and what he's up to these days.
And not to continue my grumpy old man streak, but I really don't like how in the last 20 years they've split up Cloak and Dagger now to be their own thing. Like they were a package deal.
He right now he's together. he's stuck in the Dark Force. The part of this whole Bloodhunters thing is that anybody with Dark Force has been lost control of it, and all kinds of bad juju is resulting, without getting too much into the particulars.
Silhouette would be perfect for this.
That's what I'm saying. Although maybe they wanted to get her, be able to let her get through her character arc without the interference of the fact that her connection to the Dark Force is a handicap in this situation, at least. And that Elsa Bloodstone and Dagger bit is written by Erica Schultz with art by Bernard Chang. And the first issue has a Hawkeye story with him, you know, sporting the mustache and everything. That's written by Mark Russell with Bob Quinn art. And a Man-Wolf story with Man-Wolf and J. Jonah Jameson. And Man-Wolf gets to do a little of his old David Anthony Kraft Star God era jib too, which is kind of cool. Written by Christos Gage, who obviously we can count on knowing the history, with art by Javier Garon. The second issue has a Hulk story that's written by Kari Andrews, which I wish was penciled by him too, but it's penciled by a fellow Alex Linz. And the second issue also has a story with the other Hawkeye, Miss Hawkeye, if you will. Not that they called her that, but I call her that because I think putting Miss in the name of someone who's known as a sharpshooter is a nice touch.
Wow.
But that's written by Ann Nocenti from back in the day with art by David Baldion. So Bloodhunters, that's a safe one. And the other safe one is, so far at least, is Wolverine Bloodhunt, written by Tom Waltz, with art by Juan Jose Rip. And this is fun because, yeah, I mean, there's some kind of story going on, but the real joy is looking at these really well-designed pages and all of this really busy yet clear detailed art from Rip, who's doing page after page of Wolverine slicing up hordes of vampire like it's a Shaolin Cowboy Jeff Darrow book or something. It's a lot of fun.
I'm glad to see she is back. I read the Storm Mini. I just remember when she came back to comics around the DC New 52, I felt her first few books back were very hard to follow and a little nutty. I don't know if you read any of those, but it seems like she kind of had to get back into the groove of comic book writing.
And a short story works good too, you know?
Yeah. Didn't they do a Dark Horse book too?
Perhaps. I just remember I was excited because she had, I don't know, went into reporting or something else for quite a while. And she was kind of getting back into comics that I knew of at that point. And I was like, whoa, this is not, you know, takes a while, I guess, to get your sea legs back, or it just didn't ring for me.
And Ann Nocenti, you mean?
Yeah. Not Rip. I remember last we talked, not to promote our other show, but he had that company for his own company out of, I think, Europe or something, where he was doing those pirate or barbarian comics. There were a couple titles out of it.
The last one I saw was a post-apocalyptic thing that was really, I really enjoyed a lot. I forget what it was called, but it was good. Anyway, so Bloodhunters and Wolverine Bloodhunt are both good for the casual enjoyment. To embellish your blood hunt reading.
I think you need to embellish your Ultimate Universe reading. This has also made me think of you, Super Steve, because I know your opinions of the Ultimate Universes and everything. So I started wondering what your hierarchy was of alternate, fake, future places that aren't the regular Marvel Universe. Like, if you have 2099, you have What If, you have Ultimate. Like, which one of these do you place higher on your pyramid of...
Should have said before, too, Steve Orlando wrote a bunch of that 2099 stuff, and he was saying...
Yeah, I liked it.
More is coming with that, too. You know what? Since this Hickman Secret Wars bit, I kind of think of all of those things as like parallel now. I think that was one of the effects of that story to me, was it kind of equalized all of that stuff. And the ones that I didn't like, I sort of have come to terms with, because it's just another one of those in that line of equal other realities to me at this point. So I don't mind either. I mean, hey, listen, I for all my not reading the Ultimate books, I did read some here and there where there were creators involved that I was really digging, like when Frank Cho did some of the Avengers, and David Finch did some of the Spider-Man with Wolverine when he came in, and some of the X-Men stuff. And those first two volumes of Ultimates, I bought the hardcovers of. Granted, I didn't buy the singles, but I did buy the hardcovers to read them all, the Mark Miller, Brian Hitch stuff. So I did dabble in that stuff and was entertained by some of it. But the core of it is, I don't need another ongoing universe. Visiting them is fine. A story that makes a difference in our universe that involves some kind of other thing that makes it be part of an adventure, whatever. But the universe that Stan and Jack and Steve built is the one that I want to spend my time in. And there's a lot of comics out there, so that's just where I want to, pitch my tent, if you will.
Yeah.
So I don't mind that all this other stuff is out there. I don't mind if it's great. I think that's great. I'll check in on them and see this or that or the other thing, but I won't be following any other universes using Marvel characters other than the main one. That's not what I'm after.
Oddly enough, you know, that ties into another book I'm going to talk about too, but we got to get to the Ultimates.
Yeah, I fell for the, everyone was talking about all these new old, and I had started reading the Hickman one and kind of just let it drop because the $47 cover price or whatever. I'll pick it up later. So then I jumped.
$47?
I jumped on.
Talking about a movie ticket?
No, I'm just joking. But weren't they extra expensive? Wasn't it like $6-7 for those? Maybe it was just the first issue.
I think you're thinking of Gods, maybe. Those are really expensive.
So I did jump on the Ultimates one. It's the only one of these because I missed the bandwagon for all the other ones. So I did get the Dennis Camp one for Jerry. Ultimates number one. But anyways, go Kevin.
Go me. I think I'm a you latch onto certain ideas, and then like I think other creators latch onto those ideas, and then sometimes, like, you've already exhausted your interest in that idea, but they continue going on. Well, I haven't exhausted this one yet, where you have a super powerful, maybe, villain or nebulous guy that has a Doc Manhattan, where they have, like, their own world that's, like, their own, like, fan fiction. And then you get to see that world, and you're just like, oh, I wonder what they screwed up. I wonder what they changed, and how are they going to get out of this one? Like, something about that idea, like that kind of playing around with that type of thing, it just fascinates me. So, yeah, this new Ultimate Universe is totally that thing where the maker is not around, and this seems to be setting up, I'm going to say, an 18-issue run. Would you say, Andrew, that you think this is going to coordinate, like the 18 months set up on the issue is going to coordinate with the monthly issues?
I don't think so. I mean, in some ways, it definitely feels like another one of these where we're in the shadow of Hickman. So,
oh, for sure.
I mean, it's all his graphics and design and aesthetic. And that always makes me a little nervous. Like, I like Hickman stuff, but I feel sometimes when people are put in the Hickman box, it doesn't work as well. Like, he has this kind of thing he does. And I saw a little bit with the X books. You know, he did the big reboot for the Krakoa, and then different teams played in that, and some, to my mind, of better success than others. So I feel this is the same boat for me anyways.
I also feel like this is in the shadow of the original series, though, too.
Oh, I felt, one thing I will say, I feel like this is totally felt Ultimates-y when I was reading it. And then I remembered, oh, I'm not really that big a fan of the Ultimates. Like, I like it okay. I think I'm more like, well, just, it's of this, like, we got to make it really grim and gritty and all the superhero suicide by power comments and stuff like that. I was just like, yeah, none of that is what I need in a Marvel comic. I mean, that's the whole point, is they can kill everybody in the Ultimate Universe and no one really cares, except if a character takes off like Miles, well, they'll keep him alive, but they can, you know, garbage can the rest of them at any second.
It's kind of hard,
like,
too.
If someone would ask me, though, about, like, grim and gritty in the 90s and, like, grim and gritty in that early 2000s era, I think I could separate the two into different categories.
My problem was that both Captain America and Iron Man are both jerks. So it's like, which side are you on? Like, neither.
That's kind of funny, because I remember, like, I really enjoyed Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate X-Men was kind of, depending. But I remember not reading, like, Ultimates, because I was like, I don't think that's my bag. And I remember buying the first hardcover. But by the time the second hardcover came out, that was one of my big first things saying, yeah, I don't think I really need that one. So, yeah, I can't say I was really, like, a huge fan of that element. So I actually think that might have helped me out for this issue, because people might be, like, nostalgic. Obviously, that's, like, some element of it. But I actually want to see, like, a different or better take with some, like, modern sensibility on this idea. And it, like, I'm not entirely sure what they're going to do, but it seems like they're setting up, like, world changing type of stuff. Like, they first start out where they're, like, going to use a time machine. And I'm like, oh boy, we're already in a made up world and we're going to use a time machine. And then, like, they have the whole ticking time clock of like 18 months, and then they have,
well, what's weird is it's not only, so they not only set up the time machine, but then they throw a bunch of weird parameters on the use of the time machine, so it feels like we maybe could have just done away with it if it's, I don't know, it just felt like there were lots of these, like, okay, we can do this, but we can't go back before then, and we have to, like, there's all these ground rules that the first three pages kind of lays out in dialogue between Iron Lad, who's a fun character, Tony Stark's kid, and the broken Reed Richards, who's now taken over Doom's identity. And it's always fun when Doom is a good guy. So, or at least, you know, not totally evil. So the two of them making it, but it just felt like it was a lot, at least for me in the first issue, of like, we're going to explain all these rules and I'm just not going to be able to keep time travel really does my head. I just kind of take it at face value. I'm not one of these that, like, oh, time travel couldn't work that way because of this, like, whatever they want to tell me how it works, I'm fine with. So I don't need all these qualifiers and change. I guess other people do, but I'm like, hey, it's all made up to me. So if you want to go back in time, you go back in time.
Yeah, it just feels a little funny in a made-up world that they also made up a time travel. And I'm like, wait, I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to think about that too hard, but then I'm a Kang fan. So, I mean, only thinking about that too hard gives you, like, a big headache.
Did anyone wear Blackbeard's beard?
No, you know, they can't go back. But it also reminds me of other time travel stories where they're like, oh, well, there's an anomaly in the, I don't know, 2625. So we can only go here because something happens in history and we can't. And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally fine with that type of thing. And then you also have the bit of, like, or like the Howard Stark's tower blew up and it's like the Ultimates are terrorists. So it's There's a lot to do. It feels like, because this world is really messed up, and they're like trying to get some kind of heroic rebellion possibly going. But maybe Tony Stark isn't the best guy to inspire people with his cold, calculating logic. I thought this was an improvement over that miniseries that Dennis Camp did as well, that had a lot of ideas, and that was, I was kind of wondering how that was going to work out at the time too, because it was running alongside the massive mutant hatred, but it was also like promising humanity a lot of the similar things that the mutants had promised. But I don't know if there was, like, it didn't feel like there was a lot of room in that story for them to really do a whole lot anyways. And I feel like it, you can just go crazy and do all your stuff. Like, this is his book, so he can just expand and do whatever he wants on this one. Like, you see that moment where, like, they'll get you, you'll get some few issues of this book or that book. And then once you get that moment to do your book and do whatever you want, then you see what you're actually capable of doing.
Yeah, and I did like, for all the having to set all those rules, they do kind of throw you in, which is nice. There's a little bit of getting the team together, but they kind of, most of it's taken as read, which I appreciate, because you guys know I'm like, we don't need loads of getting the team together.
Yeah. Probably, what do you think of the artwork? Like, I'm like, it's not like you're getting blown away by like Brian Hitch level stuff, but
again, that's where I feel like getting trapped in the Hickman framework,
yeah,
was a little bit, this artist wasn't as best suited to it, because it's really hard. He deals with a lot of weird abstract concepts, and I feel like there's always a distance a lot of times. I mean, there are personal moments, but it's this real kind of weird, if you look at Gods or any of his other ones, like a lot of crazy business going on that's requires an abstraction but also wants to put you in it. So for me, this, it felt just a little it didn't quite pull me in as much, and I think that might be putting it under this Hickman umbrella that kind of left, like, there's, I don't have a complaint or anything, it just didn't suck me in. But like I said, I think that's hard when you're doing the Hickman style.
Did you read the latest Gods?
What?
Yeah, I finished. I'm up through 8.
Is that the last issue?
Yeah,
I think so. It seems to end.
That's so weird.
Unlike a weird ending, I will say.
In the letters page, the way the editor talked to me, it seemed like it was the last issue without really coming out and saying it.
Yeah, I don't. And the other thing is that, like, I'd started the series and I was like, eh, and then I read a whole bunch in a row. And then I just read 8 cold without refreshing my recollection. And 8 has a big 100 years later jump as the first page.
Yeah. But
there's one where Shitty and Gracia really bring it. I mean, well, Hickman can command whatever art team he wants. So there, they're dealing with, you know, kind of the big Marvel in-betweener. And he creates this whole new mythology of the opposing sides and everything, and really well delivered. Again, hard to, when you're personifying weird forces. We haven't seen people, you know, Kirby and Ditko did it, but they're two legends. So to go in their thing, I did really enjoy it, but I will say I did have a few nitpicks. I didn't like that the main character design was like a dark haired guy with like splashes of white who teams up with Doctor Strange, also a dark-haired guy.
Yeah.
But just that kind of basic, like, this guy is brand new. Make him like a redhead or something.
We'll give him a stripe in a different place, though.
Yeah, and that's a hard, but that's like a pretty minor thing. The other thing that was funny is, okay, there's people, you know, AIM and the in-betweener and all that, but really this felt like you could have dropped it in like an Image universe. And there's Doctor Strange, but it didn't. It was kind of in fun, some ways really fun. Like, I didn't read it as necessarily integral to Marvel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so it was, I, And it didn't go anywhere. Like there was no, I felt like there was no pay. Like what was the point in some ways? Like issue 7, I kind of liked. Like it followed the order of things Avatar guy, the blonde haired guy, through his life, and kind of how he's motivated, and he's got this side personal mission to try to like rescue his missing, presumed dead
parents, yeah,
parents and everything. And I thought that was pretty cool, right? Like it kind of, and maybe that's just my preference for the let's focus on one character and actually tell a little story. But his mission wasn't complete. Then he's missing, and he was so the mother said to go back for the father. So there's something unresolved there. And then you get to issue 8, and it's like 100 years in the future, and they don't even mention anything about what happened in issue 7. And I it just took me right out of it. Like it I tried, but.
The 100 years later trick I didn't like. I do wonder if it got artificially clipped. I mean, in some ways it reminded me of like a John Constantine or a Sandman of like, just look, magic sucks and they're all like demon bargains that never work out for you.
That's got to be how he pitched it.
And it's like clever people who avoid getting completely screwed, but but still end up suffering. And I enjoy that because in some ways, I guess you could say its roots are in those, you know, crime and horror comics of the 40s up through the 50s and 60s, except instead of like a 4-page with kind of a simple, oh, Henry ironic ending, they're much longer tales with different, maybe less obvious twists. So I enjoyed that. I think not having refreshed my recollection and just jumping into 8 made it go a little bit easier. Maybe. But I do feel like it just kind of, and that's why I said, I think it's over. I'm not really sure. They could do more. They could do less. I feel like I enjoyed this weird trip, but nothing that was created was anything I need to see. Like if he wants to do more, that's fine. But it didn't feel like he added something to the Marvel universe that I need to have played with further or whatever. I mean, happy to read if he wants to, but I don't need like someone else to jump in and be like, oh, I want this order of things, you know, have a 6-issue story about them or whatever.
I remember the promo being a little weird where I always feel bad when a series is an ongoing, but then they accidentally say like, oh, it's issue 1 of 5. Oh, no, we meant that was an ongoing. Like this could have been an ongoing, but I remember them saying it was an 8-issue limited series. But maybe it isn't. And I'm like, people order differently. At least I do anyways.
Yeah. But there are some really standout images. Like when these guys do like the big cosmic things, I really enjoyed how they portray that visually. I was like, I like that part.
I hope he chose the girl at the end.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny open, the woman or the tiger, I guess, in some ways. But yeah, it was such a strange, like I said, the whole time it felt like, was this just something he had for Image or whatever? Yeah. And was like, oh, I'll give it to Marvel. Why not? We can just make Doctor Strange the character and, you know, add AIM as the thing and a few of these tangential touchstones.
Yeah, I just don't know why he would. Like, the whole him coming back to Marvel and doing all this stuff has just been a kind of a mystery to me. So this is just another one of those things.
Gods and Ultimates?
I feel like he's doing fun. I don't know. I'm on board when Hickman, even if I don't always buy the print, I'm at least going to check out the digi at some later point. But I'm at least going to try the first few issues in print.
Because
I feel like he does things. They also put him on teams that can execute his kind of weird 1,000-foot view of everything in a way that I think would be hard for some creator. So I feel like he gets a good team together that understands. Well, you know, when you're that level, I assume he gets to pick and picks people that he works well with, at least for my take. So always an interesting creative. It's funny when it's something where you're like, this is, but I mean, I wondered if he was like, okay, I did something for the X-Men that gave you guys 5 years or however long it's been. I'll set up this Ultimates ball and you can spin that out for 5 or 6 years and then have a big tidal wave wipe out New York or vampires or whatever the... destroy this one.
It was originally supposed to be Donny Cates, I think, for Ultimate Invasion. And that wasn't going to happen anymore. So it's just kind of weird when he comes in. I mean, I'm always going to like try out those books, because if someone's like swinging for the fences there, I mean, I would usually much prefer that over like just some average been there, done that book, unless it's Darkhawk or something, I guess, or Night Thrasher.
Yeah. skateboardless Night Thrasher.
I mean, we all have those lists of characters where unless it's someone you really disagree with, you're probably going to read it regardless for those like way low down characters. So, but yeah, I mean, I would rather like him try some crazy idea with something, because you know you're going to get a certain level of quality and everything. So, I mean, I'm not really scared of like something being permanently broken that I loved or whatever, even though it might be a bit scary during the ride.
All right. Let me wrap up the episode on a high note. Book that was surprisingly a double thumbs up book for me, and surprising because, as I've said on this podcast and others before, I think I've only seen the first Predator movie, and I don't think I've seen any of the other ones. Oh no, I saw one of the Aliens versus Predator movies too. But when Marvel started publishing the Alien books, and I thought this was clever, they had writer Philip Kennedy Johnson write a few limited series that were in the same continuity, right? Like each series years, sometimes decades after the previous, but it was all shown like on a timeline that fit into events from the movies that would be recognized as well. So you could see where it all fit, and it was really cool. And Marvel did the same exact thing with the Predator franchise with writer Ed Brisson. The first series introduced Theda Berwick. I think we talked about it on a previous episode. She was like a child survivor of an Earth colony on a remote planet that was slaughtered by a Predator. And she grows up to be this like badass Predator hunter who uses remains of the Predators that she's killed as armor and weaponry. And after a long search, she finally tracks down and confronts and kills the Predator that murdered her family. Then the second limited series, which not on the covers, but inside, called The Preserve, there's 5 issues and they were penciled by Nitho Diaz. We get Theda and her partner years later, and they rescue a group of 8 humans that are trapped on like a Predator stasis farm where they like have wild hunts and like learn how to hunt and hone their skills by releasing captive prey into the terrain and then tracking them down and doing their thing. But so they learn that the Predators kidnap their prey and collect them and use them in this way. And that gives Theda the mission to try to find wherever the, storage facility is for all of these other possible humans and other beings that the Predators have in captivity. So the last series just finished and it was 4 issues called The Predator, The Last Hunt. And it was penciled by Francesco Manna and others on issue 3, I think. And this one has Theda seeking this Predator human farm, and her trail runs cold, but they find a transport ship that has captive humans on it. And using some clues and triangulation, it leads them back to this planet where they think they're going to find the jackpot, but it's a trap. And there's this like souped up elite super Predator being on the planet whose goal it is to wipe out Theta. And beyond that, the humans that they encountered also end up posing somewhat of a threat. So it ends up being really engaging. You've kind of seen this character over their whole lifetime, losing limbs, losing friends. It was a good way to handle both properties, having the first three series all be handled by the same writer and all tied in together. I'm guessing that probably this was Brisson's last one of these, if they're mirroring the way that they approach the alien stuff. But kudos for them, because it made it, once that you engaged and got attached to the characters in the first book, you're then immediately familiar with them, as even if it's at a later time in the next book. You know, like, it's like, what's the worst thing of these movies of Alien and I'm guessing probably Predator, and certainly other big monster movies like Godzilla and stuff? It's like the scenes with the humans, right? Like, you want the monsters on the screen doing their thing, not just appearing every once in a while. And here they flip the script where you are attached to the characters, because it's really their story that has traveled through three different limited series. So cool stuff. I endorse both those first three Alien series and the Predator books. Marked safe by Steeler.
Yes. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Some stuff for me to look out for.
Yeah, I do you think those things are going to come up on the Marvel Unlimited? The things that are licensed property?
I would think so, now. But once they lose the license, I think they'll get pulled off. But because they used to have all that, like all kinds of weird stuff up on there. But that's the thing with those things; they can come and go whenever you want. I wonder about the digital codes. Yeah, like they could take that stuff away.
Because they also just had that Predator Wolverine series, and there's an upcoming Predator Black Panther series happening, right? Or Aliens Black Panther or whatever it was. So
there's also the crazy Hickman Assad Avengers Aliens? It's Aliens.
Oh, cool.
Or at least the Aliens mythology, because I know he wants to deal with some of the later stuff too. But yeah, that's kind of wild.
All right, well, let's make that an episode then. Thanks, boys, for coming down here to the bunker and talking some comics. All right, until the Predators versus Kraven becomes a smash hit feature film at a theater near you. Not like this. Take mine, Marvel. Later.